WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowain. U.S. troops were sent to Somalia last year to aid humanitarian efforts to feed thousands of Somalis threatened with starvation and to restore order in that war-torn country. These U.S. troops are beginning to be sent home as the United Nations takes over operations in that country. Dr. Philip Johnson is the director of the relief organization CARE. Last fall, he was appointed by the U.N. to coordinate humanitarian assistance to Somalia. He just returned to the States from Mogadishu, where he has been working for the last few months, and reports that most of the food, medicine, and supplies are getting to the people. His next project is to think about the Somalia of the future. He's currently designing and implementing a rehabilitation plan for the country. Tomorrow, he will report to the United Nations about the current situation and about his plans to rebuild Somalia's economy.
The conditions today compared to the conditions before the troops arrived is hugely different. It was one very exasperating and frustrating and whatever experience before, when so many people were dying as a result of food which we could not get to them, but we had the food in the harbor. From a psychological point of view, it was very difficult to be a humanitarian in Somalia in those days. Now, in comparison, food is being delivered to those that are hungry, and medicine is being delivered to those that are sick. Seed and tools, for example, are being delivered unimpeded to farmers, and the humanitarian program is functioning much, much better, and many more Somalis are alive today than would have been alive if those troops had not arrived.
Do you still need soldiers to ensure that food and medicine and seeds arrive safely?
Yes, I'm sorry to say that we do, because there are a percentage of the Somali society that are still marauders and thugs and bandits, and they would clearly try to intervene, stealing the food or the medicine or whatever the supplies were for their own benefit, denying it to those people who are on the edge of survival. But as you know, the U.S. is about to downsize its military commitment, and the U.N. is going to take over the management of the military unit. The U.N. is going to expand the military presence from the Kenyan border all the way up to the Djibouti border, so it will be a much wider geographical area that they oversee than is presently the case for the United States forces.
The United Nations is not warmly looked upon in Somalia. General Mohamed Aid threatened warfare if the UN takes over the U.S. operations, and he expressed concern that Somalia would become a UN trusteeship. Why this attitude towards the United Nations in Somalia?
Well, because the United Nations is in the process of political reconciliation. The U.S. has stayed at arm's length from that process. General Adid, as well as the interim president Ali Mahdi and 14 other fractional leaders, are engaged in the political reconciliation process, in which they are vying for who is going to be dominant in Somalia at the end of the political reconciliation process. And this is central to where some of these people are going to end up. The U.S. is not engaged in the political reconciliation. That is purely a U.N. function. And in trying to work a political settlement out, a lot of hackles are raised.
How important is it that Somalis rebuild their country, whether it's politically or economically or educationally?
Well, I personally believe it's central to the whole thing. We are engaged in an exercise to help Somalis restore hope to that nation, and part of that restoration process is a belief that they can be in charge of their own country, that they can solve their own problems, that they can be engaged in the solution. And in that process, Somalis come to grips with what Somalis have done to and for Somalis. I mean, they engineered the destruction of their own country. Unwittedly, Somalis visited this upon Somalis. And coincidentally, they must be a part of the process of righting their own ship.
Do you have concerns that relief can create a kind of dependency, and in terms of Somalia making the steps to become a country again, that as much as relief has kept the country alive, it also can keep it dependent?
Well, that is certainly true in the food arena. I'm not so sure about other disciplines, but in the food area, that is clearly true. And we must be very careful to ensure that Somali farmers have a Somali market for their crops, and if there are export crops, that they be promoted and compete on the world market. But it is essential that Somali farmers not be disadvantaged as a result of the free food that is being brought in. To ensure that that does not happen, we have set in motion a process to monitor the nutritional status of children in Somalia. And we have put in place a process of crop assessment so we know how much is being grown, where it is being grown, and how much might the harvest be. And then we are asking governments for money to buy food produced by Somalis that can be delivered to areas of scarcity in Somalia.
My guest is Dr. Philip Johnson. He's the president of CARE, the Relief and Development Organization. He was appointed last fall by the United Nations to coordinate humanitarian assistance to Somalia, and he's currently working on plans to rebuild the country's economy. How do you deal with the displacement, the fact that so many people left where they were living to go to parts of Somalia where they could find food? Do you want these people then to return to their villages, to their farms?
Yes. We have a program for the return of internally displaced, and we have a different program for the return of refugees that have sought asylum outside the country, particularly in Kenya and in Ethiopia. But for the bulk of those, it is a rather straightforward process. However, there are elements of the displaced and the refugees that are more difficult to see what the resolution of their particular problem is going to be. That specifically is in reference to women who have lost their husbands and cannot go back and claim their ancestral farm or whatever it is. And secondly, the orphans, the children who are now orphaned without parents and are living in large numbers in clusters in and around Mogadishu and other cities. We are going to have to deal with the bulk of the people first and these special cases later. But they are clearly a part of the overall problem which Somalia confronts one with.
Well, I want to talk about all those people, but let me first, let's talk about people that are able to return to their villages. Are you suggesting that they be put on trucks and be taken back to where they were, or how do you suggest they go home?
Well, if they are able to tell whatever organization they are working with, exactly where they are from, then getting them back to wherever that point is a mechanical process, usually by the provision of transportation. But it is not sufficient to just give them transportation back. One has to make sure they have food to eat when they arrive and until they can grow their own crops. They have to have water to drink, or there has to be water available for the expanded number of people who are drawing water from whatever well it is in their area. They have to have tools to use if they are farmers, or they have to have herds or animals if they are pastoralists to deal with, because if they're from the nomadic community, They won't go back if they do not have animals on which they can depend. So one has to create the circumstances for their viability.
You mentioned the women that have lost their husbands and the orphans that have lost their parents. Do you really need to build new institutions within the society to deal with this situation?
Well, as far as orphans go, if we can find where the child comes from, it is possible that the joint family can absorb the child or children into the larger family if there's an uncle that is alive, if there is a family unit of grandparents that can take the child in or children in. But one has to do that kind of work on a case-by-case basis.
So the country really doesn't have orphanages or places where unmarried women can live and raise their children?
There are a very limited number of orphanages, and unprotected women in Somali society that's a real challenge.
Because
their society doesn't deal well with women who are on their own. It is a very traditionalist society, unprotected women have a difficult time in their society, for example, getting by economically.
How much does Somalia need new roads, need new schools, need new hospitals in terms of infrastructure? Is there anything left?
Well, there's very little left. I must say, to the credit of the United States Engineering Corps, most of the main five major arteries have been rebuilt in southern and central Somalia. We are hauling food over roads that before they arrived were not passable. So all credit is due to the engineering corps that has done that work. In terms of physical structure, hospitals and schools and other, most of those have been totally destroyed. And there is a large rebuilding process ahead of us.
How long do you see this rebuilding of Somalia taking?
Well, it depends upon what it is that's to be rebuilt. There are certain things that have higher priority than others. For example, it is more important to the population that health clinics be developed as different from hospitals. It is more important that preventative health capability be developed than curative health capability. The Somalis have told us that elementary school education is more important to reestablish than secondary school education. So we have a $7 million program for the reestablishment of elementary school education grades 1 through 8 in every district of the country as part of the 93 rehabilitation plan.
Are there any bright spots in Somalia?
Absolutely, all over the place. We have reestablished the agricultural sector. We are in the process of harvesting food right at the moment. We have begun the reestablishment of the veterinary services, and we have begun the reestablishment of the primary school program, and we have begun the reestablishment of the health infrastructure. And I must tell you with great joy that just at the end of last week, we succeeded in getting the Mogadishu Auxiliary Security Force put back in place, which hopefully will be the precursor of the police force in Mogadishu. So there is tangible progress, and that tangible progress is important for Somalis to see because it is evidence to them and for them that progress is and can be made.
Well, I thank you very much, Dr. Johnson, for your time today.
You're most welcome, Marty. Thank you.
Dr. Philip Johnson is the president of CARE. He's designing a plan to rebuild Somalia's economy, which he will present tomorrow to the United Nations. This is Fresh Air.